Blog Talk Radio.
On Block Talk Radio. We are live actually with three different platforms. We're live on Facebook, we're live on YouTube, we're live on Periscope, which is, you know, Twitter for live thing. Well, shout out to one of the subscriber, one of the subscribes I have. She recommended the live StreamYard. I'm testing it right now.
Yeah.
So we're live on those platforms. But anyway, we're also live. Don't worry about that. We're live also on Block Talk Radio, and tonight is Tuesday. It's snowing outside. You know, it's about three. It's about, no, did I say three? It's like 7 o'clock tonight. And right. Well, it's 3 o'clock somewhere. But yeah. But tonight we're going to be talking about just a Tuesday talk with our guest, Jerry Geronimo. I get those confused with the Geronimo, because his last name is Geronimo and Geronimo. And he kind of pointed out that I misspelled his last name on that, on the description. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did. But I thought I did. I got it right. But anyway, we fixed it. So it's all good to go. And it looks like he's on the other line right now. So what we're going to do is bring him in. Welcome aboard, Mr. Jerry Geronimo. How are you doing today, tonight?
I'm good. I'm good and I'm cold.
I was outside about 30 minutes ago, man. It was pouring, but it's not that big of a slicky snow. Well, pouring, but it's coming down, snowing.
But it's pouring snow.
Yeah, but it actually stopped in Aurora.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, it stopped snowing in Aurora.
Yeah, so we're supposed to get like maybe just a couple of inches of snow anyway here in Chicago. This is the Chicago weather, you know. This is all we get. We get this. Do you call them? The polar vortex.
A polar vortex. Yeah.
You remember that?
Remember?
Yeah. That I can't.
That's a memorable time. You forget when it was. All you have to do is Google
Jesse Smollett and the guy that's supposed to, you know, went to Subway and there was
polar vortex and was jumped supposedly by people wearing Trump supporter hats in Chicago and put a noose around his neck and he left it there till the cops got there. And so it was so dramatic and the cops said, it was so dramatic. Why'd you leave it on your neck?
Well, you know, he's all like, that was Paul, like his stunt, you know, that's one of those things.
It was just like, it's just wrong. And then he got sued by the city for wasted man hour, you know, like for the fees, like with the overtime of searching for those suspects that were made up.
Right, exactly. And that's what, but enough about that guy. we're here to talk to Mr. Jerry Geronimo. Jerry Geronimo. I'm live on three different platforms. Facebook people, YouTube peeps, and Periscope, and also in Block Talk Radio. So if you guys want to call in Block Talk Radio, there's guest call in 515-602-9775. We're gonna talk to Jerry Geronimo, the life of an immigrant caregiver. Isn't that nice? But tell me about yourself, Mr. Jerry Geronimo. How did you go from now doing what you're doing? Let's start from when you came. You originated from the Philippines. I'm also Filipino, so I speak Tagalog. So once in a while, we're probably gonna speak Tagalog. You know?
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, once in a while.
You mean on the show?
On the show, diba? There you go. So that was it. You know, tell the listeners. My dog's barking.
Sounds weird.
Yeah, you are very clear. Go ahead.
Okay. I came here in 2007. I was really very skeptical to go abroad, like particularly here in the U.S., because my biggest fear is culture shock. So for a 39-year-old to leave the country, who basically lived all his life in the Philippines, it's a very new thing for me. So I was really praying hard when I was at the airport that something may happen and will keep me from going. And then the first trip I had was to my father in Guam. So that's my port of entry in Guam. And I stayed for like a few weeks. And then after I got my papers, like my social security and my green card, I went to mainland USA. So that's how I traveled from the Philippines going here in the U.S.
Yes, that's a good point that you made there, that you prayed that if it's not Lord's will for you to come to America, that something will happen that will prevent you at the airport.
Yeah,
and it still went through, right?
Yes, actually, I really believe in faith, like faith, F-A-T-E. And in my mind, I was thinking, I'm not too young to dream anymore, so I'm not really keen on traveling. I actually laid all my cards to my father. I even said things that I cannot and can do. So he really moved the stones. So I was able to, of course, it's God's will for me to be here. And
yeah.
I realized after a few years that maybe I'm really destined to live here. So
yeah.
That's how it all started.
So, well, yeah, that's the same, you know, I mean, I came here to the Philippines when I was 18 years old, just back in the 90s. Yep, still wet behind my ears. And here I am, still wet behind my ears.
You were out in the snow.
Yeah, anyway. So, tell me, what is your previous experience prior to migrating here in the U.S.?
Oh, prior. Actually, I taught in a private school in Cavite, and I started in 9, and then my last gig was in 2006, because I thought all the papers will be in by 2006, but something happened in my interview in the U.S. Embassy, so I needed to provide samples for my DNA. My petitioner had a mistake in answering one question, which is my birth date. And I didn't know at the time that when you are being interviewed in the embassy, the petitioner is also being interviewed on the other line, and your answer should match specific questions.
Oh,
so if there will be differences, they will really give you a pink slip after the interview by the
council.
Yeah, it took months before they came up with a DNA result, because back then it's not quick to have a DNA result. So it took like 6 months. So I stayed in the country for 6 more months, so it was already January of 2007 that I was able to leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those listeners that may think that, like, you know, it's so easy to come here, but when you're doing it the legal way, it's not that easy, because, like, you know, like Geronimo said, is that the person that was petitioning him to come here got his birthday wrong. So he had to wait another 6 months before to be able to prove, like, with the DNA, who Geronimo Jeremino was in relation perhaps to the petitioner. So, you know, it's really hard to be able to go through it the legal way, you know?
Yeah. The funny story was, when I was, after my interview, my sister immediately called me and asked for the results. And then I told them, I got a pink slip. I didn't know what that means, but I knew something was wrong. What I was thinking at that time was that, why would these people doubt that, you know, my answers? Because I even answered a very personal question about our family that if I'm not a member, I wouldn't know. I actually divulged a lot of stuff to the consul when he was interviewing me on the window. And I was thinking that I really passed the interview, but I think that's just part of the process. So that's what happened to me.
Yeah, it's pretty tough right here. For those that don't know, this Frodo, the centrist, is my husband.
Yeah.
Filipino husband. And he was also telling me that when he was coming here the legal way, they needed baby pictures, but there's like a lot of typhoons over there. And if you don't live in an upper class, if you don't have an upper class house,
right,
or maybe even if you do, they get damaged in the flood. So how are you going to come up with the baby pictures? But you got to find a way there. Like, you have to find a way.
Yeah, when you live in a village, like in a farm, and typhoon gets, you know, when a typhoon comes, man, it sweeps everything out.
Yeah.
You know, including your birth certificate.
But you know what? The reason why they become stricter is because a lot of immigrants abuse the system. Like, people would come here after getting married to an American citizen, and then when they have random interviews, they will find out that it's just marriage for money, and that they don't actually got married. They're not. They don't really have a relationship. Actually, when I was being interviewed in a consul window, I overheard another person being interviewed, and she or he was on a fiancé visa. And all the questions were really tough. And I overheard the consul saying that the pattern of questioning changed because of what happened, because of, you know, what some people did. And, you know, the later generation of people who will be coming will really be affected by that abuse. So
in the European countries, actually, when I used to work up in the Wisconsin Dells, like up north, you know, where we used to get a bunch of kids from like foreign exchange students, you know, and a lot of them, I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of them don't go back. They just like, you know, and a lot, and I hear from the Europeans and the students saying those people are ruining the you know, the opportunity for other people, to come to the United States and work, because it's like, when, if that keeps happening, you know, the immigration will put a lockdown on that, and put a limit on whoever can come in, you know, as a foreign exchange student.
Right.
And same thing goes with the, you know, the people who comes from the Philippines to work here in United States.
Mm-hmm.
So majority of them don't go back.
Yeah.
And
They
overstay their visa.
But the thing is, like, I don't know, maybe they're not scared. Like, the problem is with the United States, in my opinion, is like that there's some people, they don't enforce the law that is on the books about that.
Yeah.
But like, when I went to the Philippines, I'm an American citizen. So if I overstay my visa, I will get in big trouble. And that scared me. So I had to leave the country and re-enter the country so I could stay there. Yeah, they said that.
They threatened to keep you there.
I want to be able to leave when I want to leave. I mean, maybe in America, people are not scared because they don't want to leave. So they're not scared of being told, you can't leave.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, if you want to go back to see your family, and then that's a different story.
Right. I mean, I understand some people, sometimes, you know, a lot of people, like immigrants, they fall into that predicament that they lose their jobs, you know, they're not able to save or anything like that. So they're not able to go back, you know.
Well,
no, they don't.
Oh, well, then that's not their fault.
Yeah, it's not their fault if they can't leave. But anyway, so what year was that again that you said you came to the United States? 2007.
I was in Guam on January 15, 2007, and then there's not too many jobs in Guam because it's a tourist spot, so it's mostly hotels, hospitality, and I don't have the personality and the face to work in hospitality, and I'm not that friendly looking, so I thought after I got my papers, I immediately told my father goodbye, and I will go to mainland. But of course, I was scared because I know the weather in Chicago has, it's a four-season state. So I was thinking, it's okay. Maybe after 2 years, I will die because of the weather.
You'll die. You'll freeze to death. So, what was do you remember your first job?
Of course I do. I'm still young. I can still remember my first job. I worked as a cargador. As a cargador in Target. So it's an early morning logistics
warehouse
work.
Yeah.
So we unload the trucks. And
yep.
of course, like in any system, when you're new, of course, you will be bullied, right? So they place me on the last part, which is when they will unload the detergents.
The
heavy bottles, you know, I have to lift them. And I have to bring them to the aisle to fill the shelves. So basically, it's just like a 3.5 to 4 hours job. But when I get home, I felt like I worked for 8 hours. And at that time, already in my 40s, I think. So, you know, Of course, there's aches and pains here and there. And then I feel my body shake when I try to sleep in the morning because I usually leave the house around 2:30 or 3 a.m. And then before 9 a.m., I'll be done. And then when I get home, I'll just try to eat some breakfast because I'm hyperacidic, so I cannot sleep right away. But when I start to sleep for a few hours in the daytime, I can feel my body shaking because of the exhaustion, the tiredness. So that's how I look. I work with Target for, I think, 4 or 5 months. And then immediately after, I wanted a second job, so I applied in Blockbuster Video, the video,
the video store
before Netflix. So I worked there. One funny experience I can remember is that there's this drunk lady with her boyfriend. And then she told me on the counter when she was paying, when they were paying for the tape, she said, "Your name is Geronimo? Is that how you say it? Geronimo?" Like, she's really mocking me. I'm not offended though. So, and then she about my last name. And then when I said Germino, she was really laughing so hard. And I was just laughing with her. I mean, I'm not at all offended. It's my name. What can I do, you know?
Right. Maybe she was high. She was high as something. She would be laughing at the name like that.
Well,
what was her name? Do you remember her name though?
No. I remember her caller.
Maybe something
but I
funny.
Won't say. I remember her color, but I won't say what color of skin. But it's okay. It's you know, it's water under the bridge. And then my biggest break came after Blockbuster and Target. So I saw an ad in a newspaper. They said, call this number, answer the questions, and you'll be set up in an interview. So guess what it is? It's the number one global fast food chain in the world.
Ooh.
Am I allowed
McDonald's.
To say that? McDonald's, that's where I got
Mickey
my next job.
Do the M. We're doing the M right now. Yeah, McDonald's.
Good.
How many billions of burgers I think they serve worldwide? Billions of burgers. Six billion.
Do you want to tell the story about my? I answered the three questions on the phone. I was set up in an interview. Now it was a store somewhere in the south. I think it's Crest Hill. I didn't know that two managers will grill me in the interview, and it lasted for more than an hour. Actually, I was on the brink of walking out because I was thinking, if they want to hire me, say yes. If they don't want to, say no, and then I will leave. Because at that time, somebody just drove me there, and then it's just waiting for me to finish. And I was really so, I felt uncomfortable spending like an hour because they asked me everything about restaurant management, but fortunately, maybe I really have enough experience, although I wasn't a manager in the Philippines, but I'm able to answer everything I know in management. And I didn't know that the interview was being fed to a corporate store manager in Naperville, which is an expensive city here in Illinois. And I didn't know that I'll be thrown there. But in my mind, they said that that restaurant will only be for training purposes, and then I would be thrown to other stores. So, cut the long story short, the last question I can still vividly remember by the interviewer, they asked me, "Why should we hire you?" That's their last final question. And I told them, I don't know where I got my answer, but I said, "For every cent that you will pay for my every second of work, you will get what?" So I said, at last, it's the last question. And the second to the last question I remember was this. If you will be assigned in the store where you will be trained at, and the manager who's assigned to train you will refuse to provide you with training materials, how are you going to learn? What will you do? And I said, since McDonald's is a billion-dollar company, I don't need those hard copies. I'm sure they have it in the system. Maybe I would explore if there are copies that are electronic. So that's how it is. I mean, I should be resourceful in finding information. Otherwise, I'll be left behind. So that's how I answered that second to the last question. And then my store manager, since he was like more than 20 years in the job, he doesn't complete a 7 days of work. So he's just working for like 2-3 days in a week, but he's paid the whole salary, the price. And whenever he's out, of course, these people in the store that were there before I came, I'm sure all of them have their dreams of becoming an assistant store manager trainee, because that's one step closer to being a store manager. And then suddenly this islander came, who looks like an islander, like a typical islander, because my skin was dark. Remember, I came from Guam, so it's always sunny. So
right.
I'm really dark. I'm a little bit dark. And then, of course, they would know because of my... I don't have the twang, so they know that I'm somebody who came from somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, these people would, like, bully me, and then they would ask me to do the difficult stuff. Of course, I won't complain because Filipinos are passive, whether you like it or not. We don't confront anything right there and then, so we just pile up all our emotions, then we just quit. So what I did at that time, I tried to be nice to everybody. Now, the lower-level workers, the ordinary crew, they all liked me. But these shift managers who are there eyeing to become an assistant store manager trainee, I felt something's wrong. And then the worst came when my store manager assigned me to have a schedule in the corporate office in Oak Brook. So I was there for like 2-3 weeks, and I really have to train, and I got some college credit in basic shift management. That's when they realized that the store manager is going to keep me. So when the store manager is not around, the worst they did to me. And then when I cannot take it anymore, I really quit. Because, you know, I don't want to work in a toxic workplace. So,
right.
By the way, it's not the thing that I know what I'm doing. And then, cut the long story short, that's how I went to becoming a caregiver.
All right, that's what I was. The next question is how did you become, a caregiver for that healthcare industry?
Yeah.
When did I start?
After I lost my job in McDonald's, a friend of mine suggested that I apply in a senior building community. It's an independent senior living community. I worked as an administrative assistant, but I realized at that time I didn't know that, you know, the term that they said you're calling. So when I work there, I work in the office. It's structured in place in front of the elevator. So whenever the residents come down, when they come out of the elevator, I can see them actually like in plain view. So I noticed that there are some elderly people, although they live, because they live in a one-bedroom or a studio apartment alone. So even if they live there, most of them have this declination in terms of being independent. But of course, as an admin assistant, we cannot really suggest to the family members that they would need extra assistance in their abode. So what we just do is try to help as we can, but we cannot really provide the stuff that certified nursing assistants provide the residents in assisted living or skilled nursing. And then I realized I want to do something more than just talking to these residents. I mean, I want to do more. Although at that time, I don't have an idea how the daily task of a CNA or a certified nursing assistant would usually go. Without thinking deeply, I decided to explore my options to get certified. So I found this place. It's actually a part of the Resurrection System, which is now AMIDA, in Division and Oakley, of the building that they train certified nursing assistants. But the problem would be I would have a whole day schedule, and that will be in conflict to my work. So believe it or not, I quit my job even before I started working as a certified nursing assistant. I'm telling you, my sister was so mad at me. She was telling me, are you crazy? Do you really know what you're going into? You're supposed to be smart. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And
right.
she even had a bet with my brother-in-law, and they said, maybe it's just one of my flavor of the month thing that I would just be tired of it and then later on change the course of my job. So looking back, 2011 was the year that I got certified. It's now 2020, almost 2021, so I'll be celebrating my 10th year as a bottom wiper.
That's a service of
10th year as a bottom wiper.
That's right. So basically, that is your current job. So can you tell more or give me some of your ideas on how to be a, well, not just have to be a perfect caregiver. I know there's, pros and cons and a lot of things, but I've, you know, some people will, I don't know, I don't say that, you know, some people have to be frowned upon when it comes to like caregiving, because they see stuff like on YouTube, you know, a caregiver will drop or beat the crap out of their patients or something like that, you know, and they think all the caregivers are like that, you know, I hear some stuff like that. So can you tell us or somehow to differentiate between a good caregiver and a bad one?
Okay, first thing, I became a caregiver because I chose to work as a caregiver. Some people are just drawn into that kind of job because they don't have a choice. Let's say they overstay their visa.
Right.
To find a job is to become a caregiver and work for an agency. That's not my case. I chose to be a caregiver. I studied to be certified. I know what I was getting into. And then when I was there, of course, it's not easy. Because when you have loads of problems at home or your personal stuff, and then you get to work, and then you have a crappy patient or a crappy nurse or a crappy coworker, you have to separate everything. I mean, one thing that I realized in becoming a caregiver that's not mediocre is you really have, it's all about the patient, not about you. You have to think and accept what these people are going through. Like they get a lot of medications, they have a problem with their family. It's not about me. And also, we cannot afford to have an attitude, because in the first place, it's at the bottom of the organizational chart in healthcare. We are at the bottom. So if you're bratty and if you're bitchy and you work as a CNA, you don't have a place in healthcare. But there are some people who are like that. That really is something that when I was working in the facilities, because I met a lot of CNAs that are not supposed to be working there. Their egos do not fit the healthcare setting.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why are these people staying in this job? And they have this character. How can they sleep at night, wake up the next morning, and then come to work with that kind of behavior? That's also a reflection that I look upon when I assess myself whether or not I will last working as a CNA or as a caregiver. And another thing that I realize is that when you work with a patient who's combative, the best secret that you can apply is to never allow even an ounce of anger that will build up inside you. Because these people who they say are demented, they have a sharper heart and a sharper sense that when they feel that you're being provoked, the more that they will make it hard for you. So you really have to you have patience and open your mind, and also do not allow any kind of anger or negative thoughts, like when you're in front of that situation, because when they feel that you are there, you have a reassuring presence, they will make it easier for you. I actually have an experience before that, giving a shower to a guy, a combative guy, elderly guy. He was hitting the other caregiver at CNA, but he was not hitting me. The other CNA said, why are you only hitting? Why don't you hit him? He said, and I did not say anything at that time. But I realized that it's one very special nugget of wisdom that I can impart to all those people who would want to work as caregiver. You have to know yourself, and you also have to know your patient. You have to have a certain connection beyond words. I talk too much.
What would you, a lot of people, not just in the Philippines, there's a lot of people want to get into the United States, particularly in the Philippines, where they want to, you know, they want to be, you know, a nurse or a caregiver in there. What give us some points of, you know, how would you, what kind of, what I'm saying is what kind of stuff you want to recommend them in this position, in this job?
Okay, first, they have to sharpen the language skill. Because when you work in a place where communication plays a very big part, although all kinds of jobs require communication skills, right?
Yep.
It just so happened that prior to going here, I really loved the English language, and I was able to enjoy having that kind of skill, which I'm not. I mean, I don't want to come like I'm bragging that I'm so good with the English, but at least you know that you are fluent and you can express yourself well and clear, it's one secret that will determine whether or not you'll be a successful healthcare worker, even just a certified nursing assistant. And you really have to know what you're getting into, because if you're just going to work as a nurse because of job security, and then your character is not aligned, you're not compassionate enough to work as a nurse or a caregiver, I don't think you'll survive. And it will show. It will show in front of the patient and their families whether or not you are happy doing your job. They will notice it. Better be happy in whatever job you do than earn a lot of dollars but working in a miserable working condition, right?
Yeah.
Because if you hate old people, if you hate foul smell, don't work as a nurse. Work in the office, right? Party would do it.
Yeah.
If you don't like the smell of poo-poo or pee-pee,
exactly.
Why work?
Yeah, I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I had my first child, I knew then that that I'm not cut out to be a caregiver, because I couldn't even change. Well, I did change some of it, but I always called the wife, "Wife, change the diaper," because I don't have a stomach for it. And also it's like Don would say something like it's all like getting used to it,
blocking your mind,
right?
And saying it needs to be done, so I'm gonna do it. I don't care what it like, all the detail about it. It just needs to be done, and
mm-hmm.
and that's also good that you brought up about being fluent in English. Could you imagine if you don't understand English and you're taking care of like an American that's their native language is English, and then they said, "Do you want to do something?" And you're like, "Yes, yes, yes," but you should have actually said no. And now you agreed to something you shouldn't have agreed to, you know. So that's the danger of not understanding, not being able to communicate with the patient, because how can you give proper care if you're not willing to try to understand them,
And hearing them talk. I mean, it's just
In
America, there's a different type of different accents. It's like down in the South, they have, they're really, they talk fast. And, when you ask them, when they ask you, "Did you eat yet?" They say, "Do you eat yet? Do you eat yet?" Like they eat their words. So you got to be familiar with that. Sometimes if I go down South, I'm not going to be able to, you're not going to be, sometimes you're not going to be able to understand what they're trying to say.
Right, even if they say, y'all, and
right.
You don't know what y'all mean. It's not
right.
You know,
the perfect the example is that is when I used to work at Paul Bunyan's, and shout out to all the Paul Bunyan's people, Paul in Wisconsin Dells, where I used to flip pancakes over there. By the way, I was the fastest pancake flipper, hands
really?
Down. So I mean, there's a lot of people that would probably disagree, but
I don't think so.
I was one of the fastest. But anyway, during the summertime, they'll have these kids from Europe, and I was flipping pancakes, and I was gonna go to the bathroom, and I was gonna go number two, and I taught the guy. I don't know, the guy's from Lithuania or something like that. So he was like, I was like, "Hey, Igor, come here." And he was like, what do you need? And I was like, "Hey, can you watch my pancakes for me? Because I got to go to the bathroom and take a shit,
We're allowed to say that on Blog Talk.
Well, I'm telling a story. So, we're allowed to say that. I'm telling a story. So I'm going to take a shit. That's what I said. And in about a good 5-10 minutes, I came back. And he was got this all confused and, look on his face. And he was just like, and he asked me, and he goes, "Hey, where did you go?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I went to the bathroom. I took a dump, And he was just like, "I don't understand." He said, I was going to the bathroom, boom, poo, poo. And he was like, "Oh, you that? I've never heard that." He's like, "Never heard of what?" He's like, "Never heard of the term taking a shit."
To the dump.
Right.
Dump.
He said, he was like, he's trying to correct me. He was like, "To us, taking means grabbing it and pulling it," or something like that. And I was like, whatever, dude. So the language barrier. So So that's one of those things that, you're right, Jerry, that you do have to understand, you have to get familiar with the language, local language. And yeah. Whether you go to, here in the United States or Russia or, Germany or something like that, before you go over there, familiarize with the language and all that. So,
yeah.
So given that's your current job, Jerry, and.
Real quick, when you're coming here legally, they also ask you the questions in English, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's very important to know English to start off with.
Yeah, but it's a common thing. It's like, who is your father? What is the name of your, what's the name of your, you know what I mean?
They also ask you who is the president.
Right. They don't ask you, what are you doing?
People born in America can't even.
Right. Well, it's not that. What I'm saying is when you go into let's say you go to New York, they talk different than the one in LA, locally you need to get familiarized with the language.
Yeah.
So, like I was saying, your current job, I know that you're not affected by COVID because of, the pandemic, because of, you're living, what do you call that? Living caregiver? Is that what you're doing right now, Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, and given that, what is your plan B during this, COVID-19 pandemic?
Oh, yes. I actually started thinking about my plan B before middle of 2020, because I have a choice to do a side gig with an app that's like an agency that deploys CNAs to different facilities, but I don't think that's a good idea because, Frodo, before January of this year, I used to volunteer at a nearby hospital, Rush Copley, here in Aurora. November was the time when I had a problem with my reliever. So I had to choose between continuing my volunteer work not over my job. So I really have to stop it for the meantime because I had a problem with my reliever. And then I didn't know that December was actually the start about this was about COVID-19. So I have this dilemma whether or not I would try to find a part-time job in a facility because of what's happening. So I came across a lot of stuff in early 2020. The first stuff that I went through was being a notary public loan signing agent. Of a video class by somebody from California. But I had to stop it a little bit because I felt like I'm overwhelmed. I didn't realize that, I have to read all of this book. So I stopped it for a while. And then the second one was bookkeeping. And then it was more complicated because I really have to finish the QuickBooks lessons, which is really with numbers. And remember, I work as a full-time caregiver. Technically, I'm on call 24 hours, although I have my decent 8 hours sleep at night. But in case of emergency, I cannot get something steady that I can do online that will conflict anything that may happen urgently. So I also had to stop that. And then June, I was able to reconnect with a former manager in an agency. And then she recruited me for... it's a direct selling company also, which is based here in the U.S. I won't say what company, but it's based in Florida. And then after that, it's a high-end product line. So it's not for Class A or Class B market. And then August came, my brother in the Middle East told me something about a multi-level marketing company in the Philippines, which is based in the Philippines. So I signed up again. And then after those two, I thought hard, what will be my backup plan in case those two don't work out?
Right.
So before I went into a newer one, I realized it's better for me to establish my own company. So what I did, I researched on how you will establish your own home-based business. And then everything is just a click away. So I found out about basic requirements on how to establish your own business, specifically in the state of Illinois. So fortunately now place. So whatever will happen in my ventures, I can always add up another one as an under the umbrella. But the main thing is, I have my own company name. I have my own EIN from IRS, so I have to pass those, you know, those taxes, and I still have to do those basic bookkeeping when it comes to profit and loss and all my income and all that taxes.
Right.
But the good thing is, I found out that right now there's so many funds floating around for small businesses, and I really realized that the U.S. economy is dependent on small businesses. But
true,
the brick and mortar businesses are very much affected by the closures, by the lockdown. So it's better to establish a business that's a mixture of online. You can actually sell directly, but you don't have a brick and mortar location, because when you apply for a home-based business entity, you can either use your home address, or you have the option to actual address, as long as it's not P.O. Box. So that's the requirement, because they will not consider you as a legitimate business. So right now, I'm on the process of establishing my business credit, which is different from consumer credit.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm taking baby steps, and I believe that the last company that I signed up, am I allowed to say the company?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
But the last company that I'm allowed to that I signed up offers a whole vast array of products that my target market will have a good choice from. So I found Market America, and I'm still learning. So I'm giving myself enough time to absorb everything, at the same time develop myself personally. Like, I read books that will help me focus, because I'm really I'm a congenital procrastinator. So I mean, I have to condition my mind. I have to get a source somewhere wherein I'll be able to focus, because I also have a learning disability, which is not a secret to some of my students in the Philippines before. So at my age, there are still times when I struggle to make decisions. That's the reason why there are some decisions that I made that had a not so good consequence that I'm you know, paying for right now, like things that I had a bad choice with in the past. But still, the most important thing is that I have this confidence that it's better to be an entrepreneur than to work as an employee forever. So, you know, you don't just work your butt off your whole life. There are options out there. You just have to pick the right one. You have to pick the right people to work with. And I would say, I think I'm glad that I found this group of people that will be supporting me and also helping me out to learn, and also, you know, giving me the assistance that I need. Because, you know, as a beginner and as a neophyte in network marketing, which a lot of people has a very narrow interpretation or impression. It's legit. I don't understand why some people would take it negatively when they learn that you're a network marketer. I mean,
yeah,
it's better than being a slave, you know, because
yeah,
you work for,
exactly,
you're basically a slave, because you don't hold your time. They look down on Uber or Lyft drivers, but they don't realize that they are independent.
Yeah.
Work. Because they hold their schedule, they're not accountable to anybody. But it's also important for them to follow the rules of the company. But at the same time, they have the liberty to, you know, work hard or not work hard, like sleep the whole day today and then work tomorrow, and then pick the time that they think they would earn more. It's a better opportunity, I would say. So that's it.
Right.
That's right. It's better to have that kind of thing. And also, like, with what you said about network marketing, I mean, even when you open your business, if it's not a franchise, you know, you're going to have to do some kind of networking to get people to, you know, it's part of marketing. Like, so people know that you're around, you know, that's actually how you grow your business. Now with the, I mean, I've seen a really good video about how sales, traditional sales, set up multi-level marketing, binomial marketing, which is like the Market America has. But like with the networking, I mean, it only makes sense. You're a small business and you're trying to reach a vast amount of, like, you know, people, you know, like not just like in your group, like in your neighborhood, but even like, you know, like in your town in the United States, for example. How are you going to do that if you don't talk to people? How are you going to know if they are, you know, searching for something? How are they going to know if you have something they've been searching for if you never tell them? I mean, it's only wise to have a network marketing, like where you go out into your network and you expand and ask for referrals. So that's really good that you brought that up.
Yeah, and also when I may add something to that would be not all network marketing businesses are all the same. They have different products, different pay plan, different people.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that probably have done that and then got out. You know, because it didn't work for them.
Right.
You know, maybe because of or they heard something.
Yeah.
So they're under this. You know, they're being judgmental when it comes to things. The preconceived notion that saying that, oh, I've heard that my dad or my uncle, my cousin did something like that. It must be it. So it must not work. Rather than them, you know, looking into which one is the better, you know, better products, or they have the better product, better pay plan out there, and put it in. And I always, you know, put that into a category. It's like, look, when people are looking for a church, right?
Mm-hmm.
They hear things that are, you know, like on TV, on news,
yeah.
And, you know, bad mouthing something, and they judge the certain religion that way. You know, not all religion are all the same. There's a true religion that mentions in the Bible. You have to dig in there. You have to really do your research, you know, diligently to find out which one is the true. Same thing, if you're looking for a business in a network marketing, you're going to have to do your homework. And that's what I can pretty much say about that. Hey, did you notice that on my screen? I put you as Jerry Germino, a caregiver. Now, Jerry Germino, Best Life Enterprise LLC.
That's the company.
That is the best company ever.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to add something also to those people who would want to put up their own business. I mentioned earlier that a lot of funds are floating around, and I really mean it. Not too many business owners know that there's a lot of funds that they can access to grow their business or branch out to another one. If only people would be diligent to research, there's a lot of stuff in YouTube. Some people say, don't believe anything that you see on YouTube. No. It's a double blade reality. You can, you can confirm if an information is legitimate or not. And I think we can differentiate which one is true and which one is not. Just like when judging people, although it's not always 100% correct, you may have a wrong impression and you may be wrong in judging a person, but information can be validated. I mean, you don't need to hear from people whom you know are basically not telling the truth just for marketing and just, it's like clickbaiting in YouTube or blogs. Some people love to clickbait. They will put a title that's so catchy. When you watch it, it's so far from what the content is. We have to know how to differentiate that. And also, these funds that are really accessible, of course, like in any legal manner, you have to comply with the requirements. Like some of the things that I would advise them to have is to register their business name in the state where they're in, get an EIN, employer identification number, from IRS, because that will be your social security number, get a business bank account. Sometimes it's quicker than most people, but you really have to go through those process. And then when you have everything in place, you also have to have a business email. You have to have a business phone number, not a cell phone number, not a Google number. And you have to have a website. Basically, those, I think there's 6 or 7 of those that I mentioned. and you're good to go. But of course, you have to have a legitimate business. Now, when you're able to access to the funds, there are so many differences of business credit and personal credit. I'm not saying this as somebody who's an expert, but based on what I found out, like what I said, there's many avenues that they can find out information about funds that they can access to if they're a legitimate business owner. Because I feel bad for some people who actually have a brick and mortar business and they do not know about these funds that they can have access to. I actually spoke to a Filipino store owner somewhere in the neighborhood, and I found out that they applied for PPP. And I told them there's a second round of the PPP, and they said, oh, actually we applied for the first PPP. That's why we are not that affected. We were able to still keep the employees that we have in the store, although they don't allow customers to eat inside the store. Even if they have a small dining area, they're just there for, you know, takeout.
All right.
When they buy or delivery by DoorDash. So there's so many options. It's not yet the end of the world. And for those people who are feeling desperate, you have to explore your options. And also, you have to know where you want to go, really. And you have to put your heart in it. Like any job that we do, in any relationship that we have, it's so important that you have the heart. Because if your purpose of putting up a business is to just earn money, I'm sure you will not succeed. There's always a secret beyond the material things that you can obtain from putting up a business. Like in my case, with network marketing, it's more of relationships. It's not just selling or slamming somebody with product and telling them all positive and no negative about the product. You also have to be very realistic, because here in the U.S., you cannot do things that you do in a third world country. Like
exactly.
Declaring deceitful statements, it's one of the ethics of selling. You cannot declare something that is not true, although a lot of big companies do that sometimes, but you know, I won't mention. You're not supposed to be so, it doesn't have to sound too good to be true, or there's no such thing as quick, rich scheme. Because usually people will say, how much will I earn if I will invest this, even if I don't do anything? That's a very wrong concept of network marketing.
Yeah.
Some people will say, oh, I will sign up. Just sign up. You don't need to do anything. You just sleep and then you earn. No, there's no such thing as that.
That would be a red flag right there. So we have about like maybe 7 minutes into the show before we, you know, we touch down on this. So, it's been a good almost an hour, you know, talking to Jerry Jeremino, the owner of Best Life Enterprise LLC. He is located, or he's from Aurora, Illinois, and I told you that you know that movie Wayne's World, right? Wayne's World is from that Aurora, Illinois. They filmed that back in the 90s, early 90s. I actually went to Aurora, Illinois, just to see where they filmed the show, the movie.
I hope you will see it for my parting words.
We still have more than 5 minutes.
Party on, party on. Okay, I'm going to give you a lot, you know, we're going to get the final topic would be your future plan. So give us your future plans.
My future plan is to still take care of the person that I'm taking care of, and at the same time, slowly but surely, be the best I can be the best person I can be for this kind of endeavor, like being an entrepreneur, because sometimes I still have that mentality of being an employee. And also, I would still want to develop some of the skills that I have in terms of the right things to say, and also the right things to do whenever you're dealing with your clients or your customers. And I also plan on, you know, like what I said, I also plan on continuing what I'm doing now, but at the same time, continue establishing my business, meeting more people, getting more information from valid sources, and also establishing new relationships with people around me. And I would like to invite everybody to try to see Aurora, because aside from Chicago, Chicago is not the city in Illinois. Aurora is the second best city in Illinois, minus the shootings. You know, we don't have a zero crime rate, but Aurora is also a big city Our population is almost 150,000, and we have three libraries. Imagine three
wow.
libraries. So
yeah.
you can always go to a public library to learn. And I want to tell also to our Kababayans there, if you have problems with language, just go to your nearby library, and they usually do English lessons. But right now, I think they can do also virtual. You just have to go to the website of the libraries where you're at. And I don't think there's a payment for that. Or if there is, it's very minimal. You can afford it. Since we're here in the U.S., it's better to cultivate our language skill. Because imagine if you will be sued, how can you defend yourself? If you will be engaged in a misunderstanding with your boss or your customer. It's better to be able to express yourself good and say the right word. Because one small mistake with a word that you will use has a very great impact. Just one last thing that I want to share. I went to a car dealership. One question really upsets me. He asked me if I'm a legal resident. He asked me, yes. I actually exchanged emails after I went to the dealership. So I told her I was, although I'm not really somebody who's, you know, I'm not race baiting or, you know, but I told her, imagine if all the salespeople in car dealerships would ask car loan applicants, are you a permanent resident? Are you documented? You know, I mean, are you a citizen? Why would you ask
that? That has nothing to do with buying cars if you're a citizen
or not. Yeah. They would have to know, because what's going to happen is they're going to get a repossession, right? Like, so that would be like, but they don't traditionally like ask. I mean, I don't know if it's like a standard application now, because like handing like a Caucasian, for example, you know, a non-foreign looking person.
Yeah, but you see,
maybe only the accent, you know.
I was telling the salesperson that, if she will examine my application, I told her that I'm able to establish my business and I used to work in facilities. How can I work in nursing homes and hospitals if I'm not?
So that tells me that she didn't do her homework.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. She could have asked me if my information were not sufficient. But since it's sufficient, I was thinking she can actually conclude that I'm a legal resident. I'm a permanent resident. You know, but... Well, you know, that's life. So I moved on because of this opportunity to speak with you. And I hope a lot of people will hear us. A lot of people got something from what we talked about. And I hope that there's going to be 9 more episodes featuring me.
Definitely. We'll have you on again. We'll talk about, you know, maybe like in 2021, talk about politics and all that. I know that we all... we have all the same, you know, belief system when it comes to politics. But anyway, well, I thank you for coming on board and talking to us, Jeremino. And once again, my name is Frodo the Dentist and my co-host Lady D and Jeremino, he knows caregiving like I know ramen noodles. yeah, that's the thing. So we bid good night to you all. It is 7:59. It's 8 o'clock. We were live, or we're still live on Facebook and YouTube and Periscope. So we say good night and good all to you all.
Bye.
Bye.